Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
¿Cómo? Bueno, déjame nomás subir a la acera para echarle un ojo. ¡Uy! ¡Qué bella! ¡Me refiero a la Yankee Rose! ¡Una rosa silvestre! ¡Salvaje! 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 ¿Quieren saber la más nueva noticia? ¡Todo el mundo está hablando ya! ¡Está de vuelta por aquí la famosa Yankee Rose!
Good afternoon to you. It is 21 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of August in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of quality. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program, and that, my friends, was David Lee Roth for reasons that really have never been adequately explained by anybody, up to and including Mr. Roth himself. Singing a Spanish version of Yankee Rose off the Spanish version of the Eat 'Em and Smile album, an album he re-recorded in its entirety in Spanish without explanation or fanfare, I think just so he could sell more records to the Spanish-speaking world. And God bless him. So they go. So I have, it's right here. You hear that? That's the entire David Lee Roth Eat 'Em and Smile album recorded in Spanish, which I think he just sort of shouted into the microphone, like, phonetically off huge cue cards in the studio. It's awesome. So I'm going to thank my man, Dan Bozic, who I think was the one who hooked me up with this originally. Or maybe not. You know, this might be one of those things where I actually hooked Bozic up with something, and we both were given this CD by somebody else. Now I don't even remember. It doesn't matter. The point is, it's fantastic. It's like the best thing you've ever heard. I know that to be true. The only thing better than David Lee Roth just now singing Yankee Rose in Spanish, and the best part of that little song is when it begins and Steve Vai does the little wah wah thing in the guitar, and David Lee Roth just says "Como?" Let's see if I can just hold on a second. Let me see if I can actually just I'll have to do the entire thing here, but let me just it's right here at the top when he does that.
¿Cómo? Bueno, déjame nomás subir a la acera para echarle un ojo. ¡Uy! ¡Qué bella! Me refiero a la Yankee Rose.
I could listen to this all day.
Una rosa silvestre. Salvaje, salvaje.
This is so great, I want to make it an opening theme. And it's even better if you know the original song, because then you just sort of, because it's like your brain can't quite comprehend what it's hearing, because it clearly is the same instrumental track. It's obviously David Lee Roth, And it's a song that, you know, if you were a hard rock fan in the 80s, you probably know the song by heart. And yet you're hearing it in Spanish, and it's just... And the production is exactly the same. I mean, he must have just done this the same day. They must have had like an hour or something left in the studio, and he was like, I know. Hey, I know what it'd be great when you do the whole thing in Spanish. You know, and...
Es la Yoko por la Yankee Rose.
Como? Oh, it's fantastic. There you go. God damn, this show is fantastic. Where else are you going to hear that today? Nowhere. You could probably be in South America. You wouldn't hear that. All right. That's another read. That's what your 32 cent today pays for right there. You know, because I did this. Did you ever read the interview I did with All Access magazine?
I did indeed.
So I was talking about All Access. Well, you can read this at I think it's archived or something at the website. But it's I did this interview with All Access. We were talking about the launching this version of the show, and this guy Perry Simon, who interviewed me, he said. He said, well, why all the trouble with the music licensing? He's like, why did you go to the trouble? He's like, you're doing a talk show. Why did you go to the trouble of licensing music broadcast? And that right there is why. It's so I can play David Lee Roth singing a Spanish version of Yankee Rose. Oh, man. Now, the only thing that might be considered better than that is that whole reel of David Lee Roth outtakes that I've got, which is actually, that's what prompted this whole thing, right? Didn't the guy request that we start the show with the David Lee Roth vocal track?
Yes.
Which I will play here in a second, because you've never heard it, inexplicably enough. It's one of those things that it seems like you ought to have, just by dint of being alive on planet Earth, it seems like you ought to have heard the David Lee Roth vocal track. So I'll play that here in a few. That, in turn, you know, then sort of reminds me of the Paul Stanley, that thing from yesterday. And as I mentioned last hour, I got 104 tracks of Paul. It's this massive... sort of conglomeration of Paul Stanley's stage banter tracks that a listener created for me. And it's some of them have been floating around in a bootleg, you know, for a long time, and then some of them he just had himself on Kiss bootlegs. And it's like an hour and 14 minutes of Paul Stanley just talking to the people. It's, you know, there's no music, no singing. It's just Paul Stanley rapping in a real straightforward one-to-one fashion with all of the people out there in Rockland, Don Taylor. And it is just as good. I have heard from more bands that told me that that's the only thing that plays in their tour bus when they're on the road. You know, like if they're going from like Saskatchewan to Sacramento or something, the only thing that the band can agree on to listen while they're traveling on the road from one gig to another is the Paul Stanley banter tape. That's it. And they'll just get high and listen to that for like 9 hours in a row of just Paul Stanley going, all right, you know, and just, asking, are there any ladies in the house or whatever? And there are. If you would like to join us via the telephone, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964. I had to actually turn the telephone off in the minutes leading up to the show open today because the phone started ringing today during Legion of News. And here's the thing. I'm not going to say that Legion of News is a lesser program. It's not. It's just a different program. And plus, they're not paying. So, they don't get to call. They don't get the telephone of Legion of News. It's a free show. No phone. It's like when you buy a piece of software or something, and it's like, you know, well, sure, you know, we can stitch all these short porn films together for you, but we're going to put a big watermark in the middle, or so I'm told. It's something free. There's limitations to it. So with Legion of News, yeah, the telephone is not a. You must communicate with Don and I just through the power of your thoughts.
That's right.
Here, though, we actually have the phone, but it just started ringing at like 1 o'clock. It was like people couldn't even wait for the show to begin to start talking with us, Don. What's going on over there?
I'm just catching up on news and people saying things in text boxes just making sure everything is in order.
Every time you're staring fixedly at the screen during the beginning of the show, I wonder if my house is on fire.
No.
And you're trying to figure out whether to tell me now or whether to wait until the show is over, you know? Or like something horrible has happened and you're wondering exactly when you can break the news to me.
Oh, I would just break it to you immediately.
You just
tell me
right
now. And then,
of course,
later you would tell me how angry you were that I had told you and ruined the show.
I was in show mode.
But I would just tell you right away because I wouldn't be able to help myself. Oh, my God, Rick.
You know why nothing can bring me down today?
Why?
Because I got that. Because I got the power of Paul Stanley on my side.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play you these David Lee Roth vocal tracks here in just a second, which are fan-freaking-tastic. And I always like playing them for nobody, you know, for somebody who has not heard them before, just to see their reaction. All right, it's 503-505-6964, though, if you would like to join us telephonically today, 503 505-6964. You pass it, hooligans, you. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com or Dawn at rickemerson.com. D-A-W-N. Dawn at rickemerson.com. Or the chat box is open and functioning as well. Today, speaking of Dawn, we'll do a top five. We'll do the top five show tunes, top five songs from a musical in the estimation of Dawn Taylor. That's coming up. We've also got Penis Watch on the way, Job Watch on the way, Religious Nutcase Watch on the way, Stupid Criminal of the Week. My God. It's a show beyond comprehension, a show beyond imagining. That is all on the way. And then I did this horrible thing. So I'm such an idiot. I have to go down to my car later and see if I can fix this. I have like 10 cans of Vizo just sitting at the house. I didn't bring any of them with me today because I thought I had two cans in the fridge. And I could swear to Christ that when I left yesterday, there were multiple cans of Vizo in the fridge.
Well, I had one in the fridge.
There are none there now.
And then I know yesterday you started the day with a can and a half.
Right. I'm saying when I left yesterday, I could swear that, but, you know, I might be wrong about that. So here's the thing. I'm just hoping against hope that I have, like, half a can of Vizo, like, in my car, which is, you know, that's, again, me consuming food out of my car. But and it's open, by the way. If it's in my car, it's been open for, like, a day and a half. But everybody's going to be okay with that because it's a day without Vizo is like a day without sun.
So. I have another Diet Mountain Dew in there if you'd like, but that's all I have I could offer you.
Yeah, maybe you could just whiz on me while you're at it. I'm sorry. That was a nice offer you made, and I just referred to it. I just equated it with you urinating on me. I shouldn't
you
have
did.
Done that.
You did.
Well, it's a compliment if you're R. Kelly or somebody.
Sorry.
All right. Well, in any event, Dawn Taylor's working on the following stories for you on this Friday.
Homes are threatened by a fire in the Columbia Gorge. A man shot by U.S. Marshals in Northeast Portland has been identified. And the economy is still struggling.
Awesome. Are we still suffering, what do they call it, the Hindenburg effect?
We're in a W.
Jesus.
Apparently, is what I heard.
A W?
That's apparently someone described it as such.
Oh, is that where it goes down and then it rebounds for a moment and then
it
falls back down? Yeah, no. It's a strange time, Dawn Taylor. And if I seem like I'm in a strange mood today, here's the thing. I'm not in a bad mood. I should note that right at the beginning. In no way am I in a bad mood. I just have that weird sleep thing going on. And do you ever, like, the thing where you try to be responsible, you try to be, a grown adult who treats your body with a modicum of respect, and then it just doesn't work out? Because, you know, I tend to be a creature of the night, and, I'm a late-night kind of guy, and then but sometimes I have to. Lately, I've been, a bunch of, these sort of side projects and stuff, so I end up having to get up early, yet having gone to bed late. And so then it's like you're just burning the candle at both ends, and by the end of the week, you are, as they used to say in my hometown, you're dragging ass. And so last night, so I had the weirdest night anyway because we got done here at, like, I don't know, like 4:30 or something. And I basically had time to go home because, my wife has been gone. She's been in Vegas where, by the way, she did not win big at the craps. She broke even. She did not lose. She did not win. She broke even at the craps table for those people who were curious about that. But I've been living just like a single guy like you do. Patrick probably does this when you're gone. Where if you were to come home like a day or two early, like if you were to go out of town for a week and then you were to come home after like 3-4 days, you would just be horrified probably because he'd just be wearing a diaper and the house would just be full of flies, and it's like the dog would be like shaved and it would just like nothing would be right.
I think I told you this once before, before we got married. He and his roommate and best friend, Mark, they were sharing a place. And Mark went out of town for 3 days. And basically, kind of as a test, really, before he left, Mark made sure that every single plate and glass and piece of silverware in the entire apartment was clean and put away.
So that anything dirty.
Right. And then when he came back home after 3 days, like, everything was dirty. But he was able to look at Patrick and go, none of that is mine.
It ain't mine. That's, it's all mine. So Laura goes out of town and immediately then the house just becomes revolting. And plus, this is the one thing I will blame on her, it's her fault, is that it's partially my fault, but it's all my fault. She had actually poured a jar of that kombucha that I was gonna bring here like 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And then I forgot to bring it in. It was for that story that Kelly Clark at the Willamette was doing. And I forgot to bring it in and it just sort of sat out there. And the thing is, it's like a sweet kind of tea. And so then just we got a horde of fruit flies in the kitchen. And, so I'm in there every night, just like I'm napalming Saigon with the raid. So in the kitchen, and you just know that's doing something terrible to your lungs.
Yeah, that's not good for you or for your dogs.
No, but, it's even worse for the fruit flies. And so I view it as a win. They suffer most of all, so it's still a thumbs up. But anyway, so it's, And then so, but then Lara goes out of town. And I say, like every guy, as though it's her fault. She goes out of town, so it's her fault the dishes didn't get done for the last, like, 5 days. And so the dishes are just piling up in the sink. And so what am I doing? Am I cleaning the dishes, washing them, drying them, putting them away, and thus draining the standing water in the sink that is the single largest attractant for fruit flies? That's the thing, is, like, standing water will get even faster than actual, like, fruit.
Yeah.
Standing water. No, what do? I just, once a day, as part of my daily routine, I take the can of Raid, and I just... I pile all of the dirty dishes in the sink, and then I just spray the pile with Raid like once a day.
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm a horrible person. I really am. I'm the worst person who's ever lived. There's never been a worse person than myself. I'm aware of this. These are all things I know. So that's, but you know, but it, but it's just, I just make it a part of me. Oh, like you're so clean.
No, I'm not. But I mean, but there's limits.
Well, I suppose, theoretically speaking. Yeah. So like once a day, I would just stop and, well, I guess, but before I make my toast, and just the Raid goes right into the sink. And so then yesterday, we're here until like 4:30. You know, and I'm like, well, you know, and then she's getting to the airport at like 6:30, and it always takes forever. You know how long it took me to get? You know where I live? You know how long it took me to get to the airport from my house?
45 minutes.
It took me an hour and 15 minutes. So it's like, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to go home and clean. I soon realize that's not going to be possible because I don't have enough time. So I go home and basically I sponge off the counters and I just shove everything that's remaining that's dirty into the sink. So the sink is sort of piled high, but the counters are clean. The counters are clean. Uh-huh. And then I spray some little, like, you know, air center, and then I light a candle. Because I learned that that distracts chicks a lot. Here's the thing, guys. You can... seriously? It's a bright, shiny object, but it works. I swear to God.
If it doesn't work for very long.
No. But here's the thing. But here's the great thing about it, though. Is that she was only home... I'm not saying this is great, but for my purposes, she was only home for a day because she left again this morning. So she got home yesterday evening, and I distracted her with a pizza. I'm like, hey, you've been flying all day. It's been a hot, tired, exhausting day. Look, a pizza. Hey, a candle. Wah! You know, and look, and I've got an episode of 30 Rock all queued up on the TiVo. So put your feet up, baby. Let me get you a beer. And then I just made sure that she just went into the living room. So from the living room, all she could see, and I kept the lights off in the kitchen. From the living room, all she could see was the candle illuminating the kitchen in a soft, blinky glow. And that I was bringing her a beer and a slice of pizza, and that I had 30 Rock queued up. And then she had to get up at like 4 o'clock this morning to fly out again to Utah. And so I don't think she ever actually saw the dishes. And if she did, it was this morning when she was too asleep to really notice it. So I got away with actually not having to clean it. And so she's not going to be back till next week. So now I got this whole, you know. So I'm going to be telling you the same story again next Wednesday.
And apparently she also didn't notice that the kitchen reeked of insecticide.
No, that's the other thing, is the candle burns off the Raid because Raid is highly flammable. So that's the other thing. That's gone as well. I'm just saying, you know. But anyway, so I went to bed fairly early last night trying to be responsible. And she got up at like 4 or something this morning to get ready for her flight. And I woke up with her, you know, just, I didn't really intend to, but I did. And then I was never really able to get back to sleep. So I tried to be really responsible. I'm going to get a full night's sleep. I'm going to go to bed at midnight. So I now have like basically 3.5 hours of sleep that I got, you know, but it's all right because we had David Lee Roth and, you know, and Paul Stanley sort of back to back there at the beginning, a glorious day of programming ahead of us. And all is right with the world, Don Taylor.
Indeed.
And if I can just find a can of caffeine in my car later on, then everything is going to be set. We're going to be golden. How was your evening?
That was fine. It was Thursday, so my husband went off to do his gaming thing, and I stayed home. It's my friend Eric D. Snyder's birthday was yesterday, and he's having a little get-together this evening. So every year, I make him a chocolate cake for his birthday.
Are you going to sing him the Mormon birthday song?
I need to learn the Mormon birthday song, like, by tonight.
It's a happy, happy, happy birthday, dear. You all year. I'll look it up. I think I've got it somewhere. Yeah. All right.
So, yeah. So, there's going to be some drinking and merriment this evening, and I'm going to bring him the cake. But I made it last night, and I did the cake, put the cake in, was, you know, screwing around the internet, just doing stuff. Timer went off, went to check it, pulled it out, and it was still wobbly. It wasn't cooked. And I realized that, like, the lights were kind of low in the kitchen. My my oven is set kind of, the back of my oven is set kind of back, and if you don't punch that little light that says surface light that lights the stove, you can't really see it. And I'd only set the oven for 250 instead of 350. So my cake was still raw, so I was like, crap. Because it was like, of course, I put it off like forever, and it was 9:30 last night when I was doing this. So I put, so I turned it up to 350 and hoped for the best, and I came back 10 minutes later, and lo and behold, it was fine. So I breathed a quite the sigh of relief. And then, you know, took a shower, was getting ready for bed, and then like 11 o'clock decided to spend just a couple of minutes checking out this documentary on Netflix called Objectified by the guy who did Helvetica.
Which is awesome.
And yeah, which is awesome. And I thought, I'll watch just
a couple minutes of it.
Yeah, and it's about design and about, you know, how they design shavers and cars and chairs and pens and things. And it was just really, really fascinating. So I watched all of that, and then my husband got home a little after midnight. And then he sat there and told me everything that had happened in his game.
So then anyway, he had the boots of escaping. But then in my bag of holding, I found a fiery sword that had a +3 armor piercing capacity.
Yeah. And he, and it, this happens all the time. I ask him, how was the game?
He could just go, good.
And yeah, and he starts to tell me something. And I go, oh. And what happens is that we now have like 15 minutes of me basically hearing, blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Marriage.
And I'm watching his face, and it's kind of like I get the visual cues for what are the times for me to go, oh, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah. No.
Oh.
Really? Oh, too
bad. I'll bet they hated that. You know. And then it's immediately just gone from my brain.
You're awesome. You're my favorite person today. I have officially decided, I wish I had a little fanfare for this. You are officially my favorite person, Don Taylor. Wait, do I have a little piece of fanfare for the... There we go. All right, fantastic. Let me just, what was the other one we were playing yesterday? It was the,
All right, listen. I want to know if we got any people here tonight that I can get high.
Yeah. Can I just tell you, though? I think it was the guys in the Muddy River Nightmare Band who first told me that they had a tape of this. It was like, there's a bootleg tape that's going around of Paul Stanley, and I've got that plus some other stuff this listener made, and it's 99 tracks. Of Paul Stanley, just and it's of him just introducing songs or just rapping about like rock or America or whatever talking about all the fine foxy women in this place and so forth. And he said that they would just play it over and over and over and over again on like a 17-hour van ride, and it never got old. And I totally know what they're talking about. I absolutely understand where they're going with that. Oh, fantastic. All right. Don't forget.
I want him to do the voice on my GPS.
I have the TomTom GPS, and it just has the Australian guy, Ken, where he says, turn left. And then, when they started saying they were going to do celebrity voices, because the first batch of voices for the TomTom were just crap. Because they weren't celebrity voices. They were like wacky character voices. It was like New York cab driver. Where it's like, you just want to be taking a left up. It was like voices you'd never want in the car with you. Like as an actual person, much less a thing you can turn off. But then like Eddie Izzard did one for the TomTom where he would say, up ahead, bear left. Monkey, right. And then Mr. T did one. I think Shatner does one now.
Yeah.
The one that I want is, I don't know why they don't get the, why haven't they paid Patrick Stewart to do a sort of, because the thing with the GPS is, I don't know if you have a GPS, but it counts you down.
Do you think I have a GPS?
It's possible. You don't seem like you know where you're going
with
most of the time.
With my the sort of phone and television and no DVR lifestyle that
I
live.
Okay, fair enough. But I mean,
do you really think I have a GPS? You've seen my
car.
You're
talking to a guy. I don't even know how to use a dishwasher, but I have a GPS. So anyway,
my car barely has an engine.
Well, here's the thing about the GPS is they count you down to the movement. So in other words, it's basically like in driver's ed where they would say like drive straight until instructed to turn. That's what you do with the GPS, and it says when the next time you have to turn. How far away it is. Like, it'll say, like, in half a mile, you're going to be turning left. And then it'll be, like, in 400 yards, in 100 yards. And then they'll say, like, okay, now turn left. So it's basically driving for idiots. I don't know why they don't have one where it's, like, where it's Picard. And he's, prepare to turn left and engage. Make it so. And then you just do it right then. I would pay any price for that. Or, like, a John Cleese sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I would be all over that. But, like, a Paul Stanley... or just they could even get around that if they couldn't afford Paul Stanley. They could do like generic metal guy, you gotta turn left, and he just sort of wails it out. I would absolutely pay whatever the price was to have Paul Stanley, to have Paul Stanley be the voice of my GPS.
Or you get the Real Men of Genius guy.
You want to be turning left. Like that?
Exactly.
Sort of a, let's see, just real quickly before we go to the news, let's see if we can find, I will pick like a random Paul Stanley thing off this bootleg DVD of his. And it's the sort of thing that I think for some people, they would say to themselves, my God, how could you just sit and listen to an hour of Paul Stanley talking about just like gibberish, just like nothing in particular? And the answer is that you're me. And then it's, let's see here. Is this the one that I've been playing? Let's see if this is the...
I want to know if we got any people here tonight that I can get high!
I'm so... Hold on. How do I turn this off? I can't stop the poll. How about this one? Let's see. We've got the...
I can't hear you!
There you go. So that's... There's a track. Let's see. How about this? What is this?
Now, since you're doing all the applause, I want y'all to know I couldn't be up here doing this without the band, and it's time for me to introduce them to you.
So this
from
is just
New York.
This is actually from like 1973 or something. I think this is like from a club gig.
On the keyboards, Gary Corbett.
Oh, this must be from his studio. I say this to know this is like a thing nobody cares about. This must be from his solo tour that he did, actually.
On bass guitar.
So this is, so it's just.
You know, before we went on tonight, I was trying to figure out what I was going to tell you. And then I thought, I'll just tell you the truth. Richmond, when I was growing up, I used to dream about being in a rock and roll band. Playing on a stage like this, for people like you. Richmond, Virginia.
So this is a thing where he like he gets like a little sort of like a little Tarzan rope thing and like swings out into the crowd, but he makes them of course he makes them cheer for it before they'll be graced with his presence. So there you go. So it's just it's all glorious. It's all endless. Fantastic. All right, and I'll play you the David Lee Roth stuff here in just a bit. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Don Taylor at the news desk right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
U.S. Marshals shot a wanted man while trying to help police make an arrest in a northeast Portland home Thursday. The team was on the 4600 block of Northeast 95th Avenue to try and arrest 23-year-old Adam Burnt after a shooting that injured a man in Clark County on Wednesday. The suspect was also wanted for violating parole after an escape from a Washington state prison. U.S. Marshals said while attempting to arrest Burnt, he began firing shots toward officers as he came out the front door of his home. No officers were injured. U.S. Marshals returned fire and struck him several times, investigators said. He was then taken to the hospital as police set up a perimeter, suspecting more people were inside the home. Burnt was in critical condition. On Wednesday, 29-year-old Stephen L. McKnight was shot at the Prairie View Apartments in Vancouver. It's why they were looking for this guy. He was in stable condition in ICU at Southwest Washington Medical Center after he was shot four times in the left shoulder, left upper arm, left hip, and right arm by a small caliber handgun.
And don't forget, the Rick Emerson Radio program is brought to you today, each and every day, by fine folks such as The Cleaning Solution. That is Mr. Michael Beatty, who operates that fine company, 971-533-3211. We will talk more about them in just a skosh, 971-533-3211. This is Don Taylor.
Authorities said 40 homes have already been evacuated and 50 more appear threatened by a wildfire burning on the Washington side of the Columbia River Gorge. The fire was sparked by a downed power line around 10 a.m. yesterday, according to Jen Kevel of the Columbia Gorge Natural Scenic Area. A strong wind in the gorge fueled the fire, and it quickly grew to more than 1,200 acres by early Friday morning, according to Cavell. There were mandatory evacuations from Mile 0 to Mile 8 along Highway 142 and in the Fisher Hill and Canyon Road areas. Highway 142 was also closed north of Lyle. My husband has family there.
And this is, so it's a wildfire, or it's...
It's a wildfire that was sparked by a downed power line.
All right.
In addition, a voluntary evacuation included the east side of the Klickitat River over fears the fire could jump the river. Winds died down Thursday night, allowing firefighters to make some strides in controlling the blaze. In addition to ground units, there are also three air tankers and two helicopters doing bucket drops.
I would say that Klickitat is the Northwest's most onomatopoetic word.
You ever been to Lyle, Washington?
Even that question makes me tired. No. No, I have not. Yes. It sounds like a really exciting place.
My husband has relatives that live there, and he spent some of his youth his grandfather there.
Yeah.
No, it is...
No offense to anybody named Lyle, because I know we have some friends named Lyle. But, I mean, a town called Lyle, Washington.
Yeah.
Just seems like a whole lot of beige corduroy.
It's exactly what you would imagine
that
it is. It's like, you know, you're driving up the highway, and there's like a bar and a general store and some houses.
Yeah.
And then... about a second and a half later, you're done with the town. And then you keep going towards the big bridge that takes you across to the gorge where the actual towns are.
Yeah, it's like going to Otis or Washtenaw or something where you're just like, and I guess we're in it and we're done. Whoa, it's gone. Okay. All right.
President Barack Obama will use the fifth anniversary of
who?
Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Remember him?
Yes.
Do you want to play his song?
No, I just...
So many watches today.
I just, occasionally you just sort of forget that there's a guy at the top ostensibly running things. He slips my mind now and again.
He'll use the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina to reaffirm his commitment to the Gulf Coast amid lingering questions over his administration's response to the BP oil spill.
I hadn't even really thought about that. Boy, that part of the country just keeps getting in the pants like every 3 or 4 years. That's like once an administration, something bad happens there. Jesus.
Obama ends his Martha's Vineyard vacation Sunday and heads to New Orleans, 5 years to the day from when Hurricane Katrina raged ashore, busting through crumbling levees and flooding 80% of the city, killing more than 1,600 people. Then President George Bush was harshly criticized in many quarters for not responding aggressively enough to the disaster. The unfinished business of helping make New Orleans whole is Obama's responsibility now. On Sunday, he'll have the task of commemorating the ravaging storm while reassuring residents who may still believe that the government has failed them, both when it comes to Katrina and to the BP oil spill.
And also to everything. It's hard to believe that anybody think the government has failed them at this point. Also, look...
There are those who, in New Orleans, and I think rightfully so, who do not refer to what happened as, you know, Hurricane Katrina. They refer to it as the failure of the federal levee system.
Yeah, well, and it's not just the failure of the federal levee system. It's the failure of the government to actually go fix things once they were busted up. I mean, retread. It's not even ancient history, but I mean, we were all around. We were all here. Everybody sort of saw everything that happened. This is of course not Obama. This is Bush. I remember W just getting on television and talking about it, and then them saying with a straight face that it would take the 82nd Airborne or something like that. We can get forces there to sort of start restore order. We can get them there in 3 to 4 days. And I'm thinking, you know, I can fly to London by this evening. I mean, I can be on another continent within 12 hours. So the idea that it was going to take the government like 4 days to get the military, that's just a lie. That's just a falsehood. Just a flat-out goddamn lie.
Yeah, and there was so much that happened during that was just appalling. Like people that attempted to leave the city on foot and then were detained by the military on the bridge and not allowed to actually leave the city, but they couldn't go back home. So they had to spend like 3 days without like food or water on a bridge.
America doesn't really like people in its inner cities to be able to escape or leave or go to other cities in other parts of the country ever at any point in their lives under any circumstances. We prefer for people in the inner city to stay there. We don't have to see them or think about them. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our religious nutcase watch.
This is your religious nutcase watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Have I ever played you the full version of this song?
No, you have not.
It's...
Lord,
It's better than you can possibly imagine.
Well, who is this?
You don't know?
No.
Okay, don't think about it now. We'll talk about it when we get done here. Put it out of your mind. Don't look at the text box.
I'm not.
Somebody will give it away. Avert your eyes. Keep your eyes averted. Here's your religious nutcase watch. I've learned to loathe that text box in some ways because I feel like when I quiz you on something, when I ask you something, your eyes do this thing where they instinctively, like, flick to the right. They dart like a skittish cockroach over to the text box where somebody is going to give you the answer. I'm just saying. It's like, you know what it is? You know what the text box is, Don Taylor?
What is it?
That is a series of people constantly giving you a fish, never letting you learn to fish. Here's Don Taylor.
Iran today, or Iran, as some people say.
You mean Iran so far away?
Yes.
Okay.
Iran today banned all the advertisements in the country for pets, pet shops, pet food, and other pet products, claiming that people's love for their dogs and cats may lead to evil outcomes. The edict, announced by Iran's powerful Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, is based on a fatwa issued by Grand Ayatollah Nasser Makarem Shirazi, 86, a hardliner who lives in Iran's holy city of Qom. Declaring dogs in particular to be unclean under Sharia, he condemned Iranian dog owners for blindly imitating the West and warned that their infatuation would lead to evil outcomes, according to the state-run Mehr News Agency.
Did he note what any of those potential evil outcomes were, or was it just sort of left up your imagination?
I'm sure he went into detail. He doesn't seem like a subtle man.
I'm just wondering if it was just sort of a, in other words, it, like, did he say, like, it could lead to evil such as you could be covered in boils? Or did he just kind of go, it could lead to, and then he arched an eyebrow and it's in a sort of evil, yeah, and within like a little sort of reverberative thunderclap behind him. And then people went, my God, it's so evil he can't even tell us what it is. We better kill the dog now.
It's probably that one.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Many people in the West love their dogs more than their wives and children, the Grand Ayatollah declared. Owning pets, particularly dogs, has become increasingly popular in recent years among Iran's wealthy urban elite, many of whom loathe the present regime. The police sometimes stop people for walking their dogs in parks and other public places. Grand Ayatollah Shirazi has in the past issued fatwas objecting to women attending football matches and proclaiming smoking to be religiously illicit. In July, the regime cracked down on decadent Western hairstyles. The Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance published a guide to male haircuts that approved of short, neat hair and appeared to allow some gel, but ruled out mullets, ponytails, and spikes.
Are you making that up?
No.
It allowed some gel.
Yes, you're allowed to use some product in your hair.
But not like a mousse, let's say.
But no, well, it says it might be mousse.
What about a pomade?
I got this from an Australian site, so it says it appeared to allow quiffs and gel. And quiff might be, I don't know, it might be Australian for
no, that's like
hair
a
mousse.
No, that, well, that is, I believe, well, I think that's like the actual style, though. Isn't it like a quaff? Isn't it related to that same word?
I don't know.
All right, well.
But anyway, you know, just, no mullets, or and you shouldn't own dogs.
I like the idea of a mullet saying no mullet. There's this whole sections of this planet that just need a big reset button to be hit somewhere, you know? I mean, it's. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I just say that it appears that the crazy there is just, it's just in the water or something. There's just...
There's a certain amount of crazy.
Well, you know what? It's like occasionally, do you ever move into you know, an apartment or you stay in a hotel that like used to be a smoking room or maybe a house where like a bunch of cat owners used to live? And they always say, like, and we've gone through here and we've really cleaned everything. And the cat dander's pretty much gone. That's a lie. The cat, if somebody with a cat lived there, you're going to walk in and then your eyes are going to swell shut like 5 seconds after you cross the threshold, just the way it is. It's like if you go into a hotel room that was ever a smoking room, unless they have just stripped everything down to the baseboard, you know, and just replaced everything, it still smells like a smoking room. That seems to be like what the crazy is in places like Iran. But there's just no getting rid of that. That's just going to be a thing where we just have to. We just have to just sort of reduce everything over there just to rubble and then just try it again. You know, that's it's like when you have to do a hard boot on your computer and you're like, look, the McAfee thing isn't working. I've done the defrag. I can't, you know, and finally the guy at tech support goes, have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in, sir? So that's really what I think. That's what really needs. We just need to unplug the Mideast and then plug it back in. And, you know, maybe it'll work next time. Probably not. But, you know, it's you never know until you try. Am I right?
I'm just going to
I'm right.
Sit this one out.
I am absolutely right on that. Rick Emerson is saying that we ought to do that right now, today, this instant. Just FYI. I found out the provenance of that Kahlua you were drinking yesterday, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
I know how old it was.
How old is it?
I'll tell you later. Okay. And so, therefore, we're done with the thing and the where's my... There we go. Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. You haven't been to, have you been to Spain? Was it you that I was talking to that has been to Spain?
I have never been to Spain.
All right. Do you ever, have you ever been to you?
I've been to Mexico many times, but I've never been to actually, you know, to Spain. I've never been to Europe.
I don't even get, I don't even get like a half laugh for that. I don't get like a charity laugh.
Have I ever been to you?
Have I ever been to, yeah, never mind. Don't worry about it.
It's a song. It's a song reference, isn't it?
It doesn't matter. No, see, if I have to.
I don't get all of your references.
If I have to stop and like do the thing of like pulling down the little chart in the front of the classroom and diagramming the joke for you, it's just not going to work. I'm going to plunge on ahead. I guess it was it must have been Siegfried that I was talking to. I don't know how I confused you and Siegfried. Although
we have similar eyebrows.
Siegfried is one of those guys, you know, where he's just been to everywhere on Earth. I mentioned to him that Lara was going to Istanbul, and he's like. And he doesn't think of when she's in Istanbul, you want to go out down to like there's a street when you first leave the airport and you take a left and then you're going to go down like a cobblestone alley. And then there's going to be a small green awning over like a little door that's unmarked. But there's a little gold handle in the center of it. And you go in and it's like down a staircase and there's a guy at the bottom and he has the best iced tea you've ever had in your entire life. You tell your wife to do that when she's in Istanbul. And he just sort of said, and then he's like on to whatever his next conversation is, just because he's like been ever. Did I ever tell you the thing about Siegfried where he went to? Avi hears this. He's gonna know that I'm getting it wrong. He went to Italy, I think, but he went to some place in Italy specifically because he wanted to stay adjacent to the square where they filmed large sections of Hudson Hawk.
I remember that story.
Like
yeah.
The best thing on earth. And he would send me these like great, like effusive, unironic emails from Italy. Rick, I'm here in my hotel room near the plaza where they filmed parts of Hudson Hawk. It is fantastic. It is all I ever dreamt that it would be, Siegfried. he's the traveling sort. I myself, not the traveling sort. I'm a stay indoors kind of guy. But if you are going to be doing any traveling, going to be going abroad, or maybe you just you want to have greater functionality, depending on where you travel in these United States or in our own fair city of Portland, Oregon, or if you just like to like expand your brain and know stuff, which I do, all of these things, you know, you learn a foreign language. And I'll tell you what. Here's the thing about you learn a different language, and it actually just you know, it just opens up a whole different section of your brain. I mean, literally speaking, there are sections of your brain that just sort of go into hibernation after childhood if you are only learning one language, if you're only having fluency in one tongue. Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. And, you know, a lot of, I don't want to say old-fashioned, but traditionally, a lot of language lesson institutions, they would have sort of a comprehensive approach to this, where you would learn the history of the country or the history of the people or how the language traveled around the globe or how the language evolved or cultural aspects, which are all great. But which, you know, all of that takes more time, and you probably don't have a lot of time. So if you want to learn a language, if you want to learn Spanish, if you want to be able to use it in a conversational setting, in a real-world setting, here's what you got to do. You go to PortlandSpanish.com, PortlandSpanish.com, and Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer classes of no more than 8 adults, and it's going to be a fast and efficient and easy and comfortable way for you to learn Spanish and learn it in a way that is really going to be useful. So tell me you heard it here, if you will, please. PortlandSpanish.com is where you find out more about that. That is Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language lessons for adults. Tell them you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. We come back. We got more on the way, including Penis Watch, Job Watch, Don Taylor's Top 5. I got those David Lee Roth things to play as well, which if you haven't heard them, it really is just that will also open up a whole new section of your brain, Don Taylor.
And I have a small little announcement that I believe our listeners will be interested in.
I know what this announcement is?
Well, yeah, you do.
Really?
Yeah. Well, we have to tell them about the thing, you know, the thing in the place with the stuff. At the later, next month.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay. All right. You know about it.
I don't. All right, back after this. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We return momentarily. Stay right there.
kids run the streets like a room of whipple peelers, like a Ferris wheel. And everything that's said, I says it real. Ice grill your team, me. See, I love the hood and the hood loves me. It's a thin line between hate and love. Crossing and take a slug, that'll erase your mug. So embrace the thug or get placed above. People ask how I follow God and still curse. As the lingo of the hood, damn it, you don't understand it. So while you're all in church preaching the upper class, kissing ass, I'm in the trenches with gangsters, showing the ways to get paid without pushing powder. But pushing power, if you don't know the hood, then don't speak unless you're spoken to. Your comments will end up choking you or stomping you, I promise you.
Dig a hole, dig a hole.
With goons, little homie, they get it popping. Click clack, click clack, click clack, bodies dropping. They were drunk when they missed you, but that was luck. They coming through tomorrow, shorty, that's what's up. Cock back, they dang dang, hit you with the bang bang. Stand over your body and hit you with the same thing. We were tight for a minute, ride the same lane. You switch colors, say goodbye to your brain, man. Thought I was banging your wifey, it wasn't me. You got stomped at that party, now that was me. Face to face, only a bitch dude snuffs you. Like gun talk, only a real dude bust you. Don't get bust in your eye in front of your girl. Blood dripping on your Timbos, your world. I bump dudes when I walk in the hood. Shit ain't pretty. From the X to Brick City, I spit gritty.
Dig a hole, dig a hole in the middle. Dig a hole in the cold, cold ground. Dig a hole, dig a hole in the middle. I'm gonna put you down.
Rap music causes violence. Any albums that made Bush put Iraq to silence. Vietnam, Desert Storm wasn't because of Killer Cam, Mob Deep, 50 Cent, or Game. Hey, chicks be spazzing out, thinking crazy. Forget a baby, go half on a 380. Roll that, take two and pass that. My songs are like thorns, cause they get all up in your crack.
Dig a hole, dig a hole in the middle. Dig a hole in the cold, cold ground. Dig a hole, dig a hole in the middle. I'm gonna put you down.
Hello to you. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday. Thank you for coming along. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Don't forget, next week our guests will include Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, also Mr. Ryan White, who will be here on Monday. And then apparently, God, it's like all Oregonian all the time. So, Ryan White from the Oregonian Monday. Tuesday, now the latest, the irony here, or a word like that, is that trying to track Joseph Rose, Oregonian traffic reporter, is like trying to track the traffic itself, where they just, you get the, and apparently we have a slow and go and a bumper-to-bumper looky-loo situation on I-5 at Jansen Beach. Wait, now traffic is being diverted through Mill Plain Road. But the thing about Joseph Rose is, first he was supposed to be here last Thursday. Then I thought it was yesterday, but maybe it was never yesterday, but now the claim is that he's going to be here Tuesday, which he confirmed last week, but now we can't get him to reconfirm today for next week.
So, I don't believe he actually exists.
Here's the thing. I'm telling you right now, Joseph Rose, you or your heirs or assigns, whoever it is that might listen on your behalf, I swear to God, if he doesn't show up next week, we're just going to grab a microphone and we're just going to go to the Oregonian and we're going to do the show at his desk. Now it's become like a whole quest. It's become like a find the grail thing for me. Anyway, so that is purportedly Tuesday. We'll talk to Mr. Joseph Rose, who's the traffic reporter for the Oregonian. And then Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be here next Thursday. So that is all happening then. Before the end of today's program, we have a penis watch, job watch. We'll do stupid criminal of the week here in just a moment. We got Don Taylor's top five, which we had originally assembled for yesterday, didn't get a chance to get to because we were running long, and you have actually then, you have augmented or altered it since then.
Right, because there was a song that I had originally wanted to do, but I was, a lot of my problem with being just messed up yesterday was that I ran short on time for everything. I was behind on everything. And so I didn't do one of the songs that I wanted to do because I would have, as per our no profanity clause, I would have needed to have...
You would have Carlin'd the whole thing up?
Bleeped out something. Nice. So, but what I did was I actually had time this morning, so I went in and I blanked out the offending word.
See, I'm glad that you respect the, the sanctity of these the Rick Emerson airwaves, so as not to pollute it with a bunch of filth and foulness. I should say, by the way, speaking of running and running behind and whatever. Yes.
By the way, Cheryl says, "Where is Rick getting Tuesday for Joseph Rose?" I never said that. So
now isn't that what you told me yesterday?
No. Well, what?
I don't mean to throw you under the bus, but I think you told me that yesterday that we had originally reconfirmed him for Tuesday, and had it wrong when I said Thursday.
I think he was supposed to. I don't know. But the thing was, at any rate, whichever day it was supposed to be, he hadn't reconfirmed. So he hadn't confirmed.
All right. So it doesn't really. So I could actually just say, like, you know, I could say
he's
that it was
supposed to come in on Saturday.
On Boxing Day of 2040. But it doesn't really matter. All right. That's fantastic. All right. Well, in any event, so.
The middle of my back itches. And you ever have that thing where you have a sudden weird itch on your back and then you start thinking, what if there's a spider in my shirt?
Here's the thing is I don't really have that, but you seem to have that like 5 or 6 or 7, 8, 9 times a show.
This studio
would you
makes
like me to install
itchy.
A rough board in the back of the studio that you can just sort of back up against?
Yeah, like a bear.
You know,
like a bear gets a tree.
Yeah, you know, it's like a schnauzer that needs to go over and just sort of and just rub it.
There.
Okay, now, I wish people could see how goddamn weird that looks. So Dawn is just sitting here. You're just flopping like a trout on a riverbank. Against that chair,
yeah.
Trying to scratch your back. Here's the thing. It's a smooth leather chair.
Yeah,
there's nothing there
happen.
Against which you can scratch.
No.
You know, maybe you want to go down to the warehouse. I bet Ben would scratch your back. You know,
I don't want to ask that
Ben. Yes, you do. Here's the thing. You just don't want me to know that you're asking him. because you know that I would be incapable of not talking about it. Is Ben the young strapping lad in the warehouse who, with the Battlestar Galactica tattoo, who offered you blackberry cobbler last week and then this week offered you lasagna?
Yeah.
Now,
his girlfriend makes him food, apparently, and then he brings food.
But then he tries to give it to you.
Well, I think he just shares in general. He gave some to Sarah, too, because Sarah came in and he asked for lasagna. And whereas I was like, oh, no, thank you. As soon as he asked Sarah if she wanted lasagna, she was like, hell yeah.
Thanks, this is great.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like he's singling you out and offering you food? Because I'm not saying it would be weird, but that would almost seem like it was like he was, attempting to make a play for you.
No,
he's
just one of those fellows that has manners, I believe. He has a large amount of food. He's like in the general vicinity and is heating up some food. And then he says, I have this large amount of food. Would you like some? Because that's what polite people
do.
Why
did you say no? You said no to blackberry cobbler, which you presumably like. And then you said no to lasagna. And it's being offered to you by a hot guy in a Battlestar Galactica tattoo.
Because I'm being very vigilant.
I'm
about
a girl. I won't eat in front of men.
No, trust me, I don't have that problem at all.
It's true.
I've seen
you eat.
Yeah, I've eaten in front of you like almost every day. No, I'm just being very vigilant about what I eat because I'm trying to become less spherical.
What if he offered you something that was low calorie? If he offered you a relatively low calorie food.
I might, but remember when Peter Carlin was in here
with his carrot
big
sticks.
Thing of carrot sticks and raw green beans. Ate some of the vegetables.
You're sounding a little defensive and I'm just making the observation.
No, I'm not defensive.
Incidentally, so then during the break, speaking of just of insanity, so Dawn saw this where I put on the song which is from the Justified soundtrack and then immediately sprinted to my car where I then did have I had, as predicted, half a can of Viso. And it's actually, I mean, it's not chilled, but because I parked in the shade, it's actually not that warm either. So it's like a room temperature Viso, which is still a caffeine delivery system of the greatest efficiency.
And I posted about that on my Facebook page while you were gone.
That I was running to the car to get Viso?
That you were playing a song so you could run to your car and look for Viso.
Yeah. Well, let's just all not pretend I'm that. All right. So we had this by request, and you didn't mention what the name of whoever it was, but somebody requested that we play a couple of the David Lee Roth tracks, which you have not heard. Actually, so we opened the show with a little bit of David Lee Roth audio, and so this is him from, I guess, if this is the Eat 'Em and Smile record, it would have been God, like 86, maybe.
Como? Bueno, déjame nomás subir a la acera para echarle un ojo. Uy.
I mean, that really is the money line right there. When he says that, ooh, and even then. You can tell that when David Lee Roth, he might have actually just been method acting, and he might have really had like a sort of matador outfit or like a Zorro mask or something on in the studio. I can really see him doing that. But he recorded this entire album, the Eat 'Em and Smile record, front to back, also in Spanish. And I never even knew that it existed. It's one of those things that you think that, you know, we would have heard about. But I guess he must have had some manager somewhere. His manager, Saul, just said like, So Dave, if you record it, you know, that's a whole pile of pastrami we're going to miss out on otherwise. But, you know, I'll get you a guy. He'll hold some cue cards. It'll be phonetic. One day, bada bing, money in the bank. And then he was just like, all right, bow, you know, and just went and did it. I played that, and maybe, I don't know, for the first time about a year and a half ago or something. Like a day after I played that on the air, I got a package dropped off at the studio from a listener named Adrian, I believe. And Adrian dropped off a CD, and it just said David Lee Roth Vox, V-O-X. And I think these have subsequently sort of made their way around the internet. But I was like, well, what the hell? I've never even heard these. So back in 19, you kids, back when Van Halen was a band with David Lee Roth, they recorded this album called Van Halen 1. And the the first big single from that was Running with the Devil, and so somebody, the engineer or whoever at the session, was just running a separate track of just David Lee Roth's vocals, because the way they recorded Van Halen is they did the instrumental tracks pretty much live. I think there's only two overdubs on the entire record. I think there's one on You Really Got Me, maybe one on Janie's Crying or something. But the album was pretty much recorded live, and then Roth went in and did his vocals over the top. And you can actually hear the instrumental playing in his headphones because he's got his headphones up really, really loud. But this is just some of the raw vocals from David Lee Roth's Running with the Devil vocal sessions for Van Halen 1.
Oh! Oh, yes! Yeah, yeah!
I love David Lee Roth.
I'll tell you all about it. God damn it, baby, you know I ain't lying to you. I'm only gonna tell you one time.
It's, first of all, let me just stutter for a second to say, if there's somebody out there that doesn't like David Lee Roth, I weep for you and your whole colorless existence.
I want that last little bit as a ringtone.
That I actually had that, not as my ringtone, but I had that specifically, I believe, as, I think if anybody sent anything to my rick@rickemerson.com account for a while, that was my ringtone.
I'll tell you all about it. God damn it, baby, no, I ain't lying.
Right there.
I'm only going to tell you one time.
Let me just interrupt for one second before we continue. We're about halfway through this particular take, and then we'll do Stupid Criminal of the Week. The great thing about this, and the reason why David Lee Roth is just one of my favorite people of all time, I mean, and not just in terms of singing, but just as a human, is because David Lee Roth strikes me as a guy who realizes you really only get one time around on the merry-go-round. And it's like, and you know, and you might as well just embrace life to the fullest, and that anything done in half measures is just wasting your time on planet Earth. And if you're going to hold back and do something less than full force, you might as well be dead already. So why not just go for it? Which is why when he's not doing this, he's like climbing the side of a mountain, somewhere, or like building a paraglider in his garage while learning how to kick dance. That's the next thing on that track, by the way. And it just comes out of nowhere. Now, I defy you right now to name me another hard rock artist that would have a penny whistle or whatever the hell that thing is in the studio with him while cutting tracks for the record. You know? If there's nobody but David Lee Roth. There's no one. No one. No one. And I love me a lot of rock and roll frontmen. There's no one on earth that could make that work but that guy.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Woo. Run on one more time.
It's just glorious. I mean, it's just one of the best things I've ever heard.
God.
I don't care what kind of day you're having. If you put that on, that will, as my mother would say, lift the corners of your heart. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. David Lee Roth.
Oh, that was lovely.
Oh, goddamn. All right. without further ado, it's time for this week's installment of Stupid Criminal of the Week. This is Don Taylor.
Two thieves knew there were a lot of police at the Fred Meyer off Southeast Johnson Creek Boulevard in Clackamas on Wednesday morning, but apparently they just didn't care. While dozens of officers, foot patrol, detectives, canine officers, officers on horseback, were in and around the store as part of the annual Shop with a Cop Back to School event, police said Shane Alexander, 20, of Hillsborough, and Jason Van Tress, 30, of Southeast Portland, were moving about the store, filling their backpacks with shoplifted merchandise. They were a little freaked out when they saw all the cops at first, said police spokesman Pete Simpson. But then they decided the police would be too distracted helping kids to notice them.
Uh-huh.
Police officers assisted security in making the arrests. As for the back-to-school charity event, Simpson said it was a tremendous success. Each student received about $150 in gift cards for a shopping spree. The Portland Police Sunshine Division teamed up with Fred Meyer for the Shop with a Cop event. They realize, hey, we're out here doing this because we care about them, said police spokesman Larry Graham. So again, Shane Alexander of Hillsborough and Jason Van Tress of Southeast Portland, shoplifting, while the Fred Meyer was full of cops, they are our stupid criminals of the week.
And by the way, we should know, first of all, a couple of things. That is brought to us by our fine friends at mugshotlist.com. Mugshotlist.com, offering mugshots around the clock, constantly updated by a team of robots. And those are there for your perusal anytime, day or night. You go to mugshotlist.com, and it covers, I believe, 19 different states, as well as myriad counties from scattered other areas of our fine country. Mugshotlist.com will be giving away a free membership to mugshotlist.com in just one moment. Before we do that, I just have to say that story was actually sent to us. We were talking about guys named Lyle who listen to us and friends of us. Our friend Lyle Brown from the Muddy River Nightmare Band, who I mentioned earlier as being fans of the Paul Stanley tape. He actually sent us that story. So our stupid criminal of the week story comes to us from our friend Lyle, so thank you for sending that along. And we want to thank mugshotlist.com for making this possible and for your loyalty and devotion and dedication as listeners. We're going to give a free membership to mugshotlist.com to Mr. William Bagley. And it's Mr. William Bagley, listener of the Rick Emerson radio program. William Bagley, you are the winner of the mugshotlist.com membership. You've handed me a thing written in green ink here. Oh, okay. So that, no, I'm glad you actually mentioned this, too. That is, somebody asked me this the other day, actually, and I wanted to make sure that I had the right information about it. Somebody asked me the difference between just going and viewing mugshotlist.com, as just, a regular person, and then having the full membership. And the full membership, it does let you browse. Like, if you just want to see and I think we all know what I'm talking about here, certain kinds of mugshots, by which I mean trashy girls. You can do that. So you can browse them by gender. You can view them by county. So if you just want to see, like, what the folks in your neck of the woods are doing when they're not, helping the poor or building schools, you can find that out at mugshotlist.com. Your unlimited membership lets you search by a category such as county and gender, and you can view unlimited pages, etc. Of course, for William Bagley, you get to do all that right now because you are the winner of the Mugshot List membership, and mugshotlist.com has brought you this installment of Stupid Criminal of the Week.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A man in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Where?
Florida. Has been charged with stalking his own daughter. Dennis Hobbs, 59, can't go near his 19-year-old daughter because he's barred by a restraining order. Hobbs was arrested after police spotted him driving slowly around a woman's shelter where his daughter was living in fear. Inside of his car, police say they found a loaded gun, which he had a permit for, a video camera, a notebook detailing his daughter's whereabouts, and a wig. Hobbs was dressed in black and had painted his face black when he was found.
Stalking your own daughter is just... I mean, that's not even trying. That's just going for the low-hanging fruit there. I mean, there's not even... Where is the motivation? Where's the ambition, I ask you?
His attorney, Kim Revellini, says there's a logical explanation for all of the items, but it'll have to come out in court.
No, we're not going to tell you now. You have to wait for that.
This is one of those situations that looks odd out of context. But there's a reasonable explanation, Revellini said.
I know this looks strange.
According to the arrest report, the daughter said her father was very religious and disapproved of her relationship with a boyfriend. Uh-huh. The report also indicates that Hobbs sent his daughter several emails prior to his arrest. One of the emails stated, "I love you, but there is no loving way to do what I must." When he was arrested, police say Hobbs told them, "You just signed her death certificate." Revellini says Hobbs is just a concerned parent who was worried about his daughter living in a high-crime neighborhood.
Sure.
Now it's up to the courts to decide if Hobbs is actually a concerned parent or a stalker.
No. There's a logical explanation for everything. Is there a photo?
Yes. His crazy eyes.
All right. Hold on. Let me see. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Now, he looks just like somebody, too, and I can't quite place him. He looks like... Okay. First of all, he looks like... what's his name? The guy that plays Monk.
Tony Shalhoub?
You got a little bit, don't you think he's got a little bit of that going on there? He's just got like a little...
Just a touch.
He looks like that guy crossed with J.K. Simmons, Schillinger from Oz, and also, what's his name, Perry White in the Spider-Man movies. If you were to merge the two of them, that's kind of what he looks like. All right, here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
This week, Jake Billett of Marysville, California, caught a pacu, which is related to the piranha, in Marysville, California's Ellis Lake. Piranhas, which have razor-sharp teeth, don't play nice in the water. They eat anything that has meat on it. Billett, who cast his line for catfish using hot dog bait in a popular fishing area, was surprised by what he caught. As soon as it came out of the water and it started snapping its jaws, I could hear the click of the teeth going pretty quick, Billett said. I think I just caught myself a piranha.
Jesus.
The fisherman brought the pacu to work in a cooler Thursday to show it off. The fish is 15 and a half inches long. Pacu are omnivorous, eating both meat and plants. It's likely the fish was someone's pet and got too big too fast and was dumped in Ellis Lake. Pacu are known as nibblers, not devourers like piranha. John Geyser from Geyser Pet said, yes, there is a difference. The pacu get a lot bigger and they do have sharp teeth, but it's not nearly as mean as a piranha.
You know, the thing about the piranha and the pacu is because it's when Laura went to the Amazon, she... No, see, I don't care if it's just a nibbler or not. I don't want that thing nibbling anywhere near. First of all, I don't want to be nibbled on by animals. I think I speak for everybody when I say this.
No.
But you know, the weird thing about the piranha there is she said that, you know, the people who live in that area, that in that part of the world, they have this weird, not a love-hate relationship, but it is this strange, like... I don't know. We used to have this thing with the Russians, this mutually assured destruction, where it was this sort of like cautious respect, sort of a fearful kind of respect. And she said that piranha and people seem to have that because people know enough not to trail their hands in the water if they're in a boat. And she was told really sternly, I think like she was on the Amazon and she's like, you know, well, it's a hot day. I guess I'll just hang one of my legs overboard into the river. And I think somebody was immediately like, don't, please. No, you don't want to do that. You know, but at the same time, it's like anytime you need to sharpen anything, because there's a lot of like, you know, where they do a lot of woodworking and carving or whatever. And if you need to sharpen anything, their sharpening implement of choice is like piranha teeth that they'll just take and that they'll, you know, they'll just like take piranha jaws out and just use them as like a whittling thing, like a like how you might whittle something with a knife. They're just whittling with a handful of piranha teeth. So it's like this weird sort of intertwined thing. But that is one of those creatures you have to keep an eye on, not so much now, but our descendants in like a billion years, like the squid that are going to be roaming across the country at some point on huge stilt-like legs and going walking across states, you know, and picking off stray members of the human race that have managed to live long enough. Piranha, they're right there. I mean, they may be like a runner-up or something in that sort of, you know. Like if the squid are not able to perform their duties as, you know, apex predator, piranha will step up.
I went on a trip to the San Diego Wild Animal Park once, and I swear to God there was a deer that the guy said was carnivorous. And so for years I kept thinking about how, like, in Africa there's this carnivorous deer. But then years later someone told me that that's not actually true. And so then I was stuck trying to figure out
what he was talking about.
Did the guy just make it up just to screw with the tourists? Or is this one of the things that I heard something and somewhere in my own brain I turned it into something else?
Well, did he say that it was a carnivorous deer or that, like, it had been known to be or that in certain – because anything is carnivorous if you leave it alone long enough, I would imagine, any mammal. Like, in other words, if whatever it chooses to eat is not around for a long enough period of time, I imagine it would eat meat. You know, like you'd eat a box of twigs probably if it's all there was, you know, after a month or so.
I think it might be one of those things, like when I was a kid, though, and I saw – the thing about trapdoor spiders, and I also saw this thing about something that was so poisonous that if it bit like a cow, it would kill a cow. And I conflated the two, and I thought there were these spiders that jumped out of holes at cows and then killed them.
Okay. Here's the thing. Can I unnerve you with something?
Sure.
Here's the creepy thing that you're going to deal with someday. Not so much now or next year, but you know, maybe at some point in the future. When you finally approach the stage in your life when the dementia sets in, you're just going to see that spider everywhere, like in the old folks' home. That's the thing. I think about that sometimes, that whatever it is that you are like afraid of now, however nonsensical or illogical it may be, that's the thing you're going to hallucinate someday when you're an old crazy person. That's one of the reasons I don't sit around and, like, you know, drop acid or something, because I would immediately then just because if I were to do that, all of the stuff in my head that I know isn't real but that I still think about and that kind of freaks me out, like, you know, giant squid on stalk-like legs, I just know if I were to sit home and, you know, and just, you know, and just sit there and just take a bunch of orange sunshine or something, that while I was there listening to my Allman Brothers records and, you know, watching the windows melt, I would just see huge squid looking in at me. And so someday when, you know, when whatever remains of my family has dumped me, you know, in a nursing home somewhere, that's what I'm going to see. The nurse will come to my bed to give me, like, morphine or something, and she'll just have huge plate-like eyes and tentacles.
And, of course, popping up in the text box, somebody sent a link that apparently there are Scottish deer who supplement their diet by killing and eating small birds.
See, that doesn't surprise me. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, they're mammals, so it's not like, yeah. It's, hey, here's a question I have for you. So, this, I know this sounds dumb. So fish are fish and mammals are mammals. Birds are not mammals, though, right?
They're avian.
They're avian something, but that's the thing. But they're not. But avian is like an adjective. So that's not a noun. They're something, though. Somebody asked me. It might have even been Laura. Actually, this is one of those. This might have been one of those Siamese twins joined at the hair conversations we were having, where we both knew that we were dumb, but we couldn't quite figure out the correct answer anyway. And she said, well, they're not mammals. And I said, no, because they lay eggs. And she said, okay, so what are they? And I couldn't think of the – they're not reptiles. They're not mammals. They're not fish. They're – and I couldn't think of whatever the word is. And it's not – I don't think – I mean, they are avian creatures, but I don't think that's the noun.
Yeah.
That is an adjective. That is a descriptor,
I believe.
Are you sure
birds isn't actually just the –
But doesn't it sound too plain? It doesn't sound like that could possibly be scientific. What are they? They're birds.
Well – you get insects, and insects are different from arachnids.
Yes.
So couldn't birds just be birds?
I suppose. I mean, I'm not even really saying that there has to be an answer for it right now. Mm. I'm just pointing out that is another one of those things that seems really obvious that I'm sure a lot of third graders – this is why I would never go on that show that Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Because clearly I am not. In many, many, many areas of my life, I am, in fact, dumber than the average kindergartner in just a whole vast swaths of my existence. Let's see here. Somebody says, I love the David Lee Roth thing. Where can I get a copy of that? That is one of those things that found its way onto the Intertron, where, by the way, amusingly enough, there's that horrible Microsoft program they made to compete with GarageBand. It's called Songsmith or Songcraft or whatever. Have you seen that thing?
I've played one like that.
There was an awful made for the internet commercial for the Microsoft product that went around.
I played one that was on my PS2 that was just singing. It was called SingStar. That was it. It wasn't actually Rock Band.
What was the thing where you sing and then it creates a song around it?
No. This was like Rock Band, but
like a karaoke
star. No,
Microsoft has this product whose name I forget at the moment. I think it's called Songsmith, but I could be wrong about that.
I remember seeing the video for
like
that.
Their competitor GarageBand, but the deal is it has what is actually a pretty great little function where you just sing an a cappella track like of your own song, and it will analyze it assesses the frequency and the notes and the whatever, and then it creates a music background to go with whatever melody line you have sung. And so, of course, immediately what happened with this David Lee Roth thing is people just played the David Lee Roth song into this Microsoft program, which would then create these horrible, like, samba backgrounds for it. And it just became sort of glorious, which I've been tempted to do with a lot of those. Like, I have a bunch of Steven Tyler stuff, too, where he's just doing scatting, where he's just doing that, he's another guy that is just with the whole, where he just says stuff that is so just freaking retarded and just like aggressively absurd. But it's like he just sells it with such sincerity that like you can't say anything about it. Like David Lee Roth, with the goddamn penny whistle and the, no one know, goddamn it, wow. And you just kind of go, well, he believes it. That's coming from inside. Like he's not, like, and he obviously has influences, like either Louis Prima and all that stuff. And he is sort of a Busby Berkeley in hell kind of a thing. But obviously all naturally combined in him as a young man, and then it all just sort of came pouring out like it did with Steven Tyler, who's like this unholy David Johansen, James Brown sort of thing. Have I ever played you that sound cut of Steven Tyler talking about love in an elevator?
I think so. I think I've heard that.
I'm going to play it again regardless because it's only at 12 seconds, and then we'll do some more news. Okay. We got your top five coming up. This is great just because it has what I call – it's like a charming – It's a charming sort of lecherousness that's impossible to dislike because it's done with just such a good-natured gleam in the eye where he really is just – he's saying what could just be considered like the sleaziest thing on earth, but he just does it in – like as you said earlier about the – what's it, Ben? There's just sort of a – just like sort of a gee-whiz kind of a delivery. So somebody had asked Steven Tyler where the song Love in an Elevator came from. And he was relating that it was based on an incident that occurred to him that was drawn from life, as they say. He was telling this story basically that involved him and two girls getting it on in an elevator. So it's like him, two girls in an elevator. I think everybody's drunk. And at one point, he and one of the girls were engaged in an act of sexual congress when apparently the door opened in the lobby. They're all still in the elevator, and Tyler's getting up with this girl, and the door opens, and they're in the lobby, and it's whatever. So this is him, though, relaying the story.
And you know that commercial where the chocolate meets the peanut butter? our heads met, and the other girl, by the way, was pushing the buttons of every floor, because she was totally inebriated. And suddenly, without notice, the doors opened up, and we were in the lobby. And she was buns up and kneeling. I was a wheeling and a dealing. Yeah. And so I had to write it down, right? Memoirs.
There you go. It's just that little yeah he does there that really just it makes the whole thing hang together perfectly. Awesome. All right. Have we already played the news open? Are we in a news segment now?
I think we're in the news segment now.
By God.
Read a news story.
Okay.
An AIDS activist group filed a workplace safety complaint against Larry Flint yesterday, accusing the porn king of creating an unsafe environment for his stable of sex stars by not requiring they use condoms. To illustrate its point, the AIDS Health Foundation also delivered 100 DVDs of hardcore Flint films to the State Division of Occupational Safety and Health's Los Angeles office. Only a single scene in one of the films shows a performer using a condom. The films, most with innuendo-laden names, clearly demonstrate workplace activities highly likely to spread bloodborne pathogens in the workplace, the complaint says. It urged OSHA to to order the use of condoms on film sets. Larry Flint Productions president Michael Klein indicated that it is an unreasonable demand, adding porn audiences don't want to watch people using condoms. "We won't budge when it comes to condomless productions," he said in a statement. "That's what the consumer wants, and we deliver it." Federal law requires that all porn actors be tested for HIV 30 days before the start of filming, and Klein said Flint's productions adhere to those standards. He added that none of the company's actors has ever tested positive for HIV. AHF President Michael Weinstein said his group targeted Flint in part because he's arguably the world's most famous and successful pornographer. Hours before filing the complaint, AHF members, clad in bright red shirts, demonstrated outside the Beverly Hills skyscraper that is home to Larry Flint Productions. Earlier this year, the group brought similar complaints against 9 talent agencies that said promote actors willing to have unprotected sex on camera. Cal OSHA spokeswoman Chris Ann Chesserick said Thursday those complaints prompted an investigation, although she didn't know the status of it.
You know, it must just be a really, really sad, depressing life if your entire existence hinges upon going and squashing the fun of other people. You just wake up and saying, how can I make life unpleasant for people who've never done anything to me?
That is the most interesting day they'd had at OSHA for a while, though.
Seriously, that must be one of those, you know, where there's a guy outside with a wheelbarrow full of porn that he wants to drop off. I wonder what it says. I mean, it is interesting, and I bet most people are this way, that don't you reflexively, until you are given reason not to, don't you reflexively and automatically take Larry Flint's side in anything?
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, if there's anything accuse Larry Flint of, and you just default to defending Larry Flint.
I mean, the thing is, he's one of those guys that he's just like sort of a horrible, repellent person. But at the same time, he is like completely on the side of right in everything he does.
Exactly. No, it's just, you know, and also that he is so that he does not pretend to be anything else.
No.
That's the thing about Larry Flint is Larry Flint has never. Have you ever read his autobiography?
No.
It's called. It's really quite good. It's one of those autobiographies that's a little frustrating, though, because it's now so out of date. It's not the, you know, I think it's from 1996-97, so it predates, I think, the movie about him, and it predates some of his, you know, like, you know, some of his struggles with the internet and some of the obscenity cases and that whole business with his crazy nutcase daughter. Anyway, it's called An Unseemly Man. And he really just he has no bones about saying just like, I make my living doing what people find to be repulsive, but it's all I know how to do, and it's made me rich. And, you know, and then I saw this great little documentary on him, and they were sort of talking about, they used him as an example of sort of the new breed of high stakes gambler in Vegas, and they were showing at one of the places like the Bellagio or something, and they show there's like the regular, you know, like the $15 limit table or whatever, and then there's like the $35 limit table, and then there's the high roller room, and then there's like the secret room for like the whales, as they call them, the guys who are really ultra wealthy, that are, you know, rooms that like no one else will ever even see. Because they're in a whole separate part of the hotel where he was playing blackjack, and I think he was playing three positions at once. In other words, he was playing basically as though he were three different people. He was playing three different hands of blackjack at a time, and he was using chips that were $25,000 each.
Jesus.
And I mean, and he was sitting there going, "This is all paid for by porn," and I was just like, and I went, "God damn it, I love this country." I mean. It was all that is wonderful about the United States of America and our freedoms, just like at once. And I'm not saying we don't have problems, but I mean, I'm telling you right now, you look at that and you go, however many problems we have, we are just centuries ahead of the rest of the world. I mean, the fact that you can just sell pictures of boobs in such a massive amount that you can then just go play three-handed blackjack at $25,000 a chip, like, you know, and then take your Learjet back to Los Angeles, where your biggest problem is people bringing wheelbarrows full of porn by OSHA to ask that your hookers, you know, that you hire to have sex, you know, that they wear condoms. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, that is a sort of an America F yeah moment right there, if you ask me. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our job watch.
All right, here is your – let's see if I can find this here. I have recently added this to our soundboard. Here is your job watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Yeah.
I hate this job. I hate this goddamn job, and I don't need it.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
Ain't this job in service?
Take this job and shove it.
Here is Don Taylor with your Job Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Weak consumer spending and a lack of jobs have sent the recovering economy into a stall. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke will give a major speech today in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. One of his tasks is to restore public confidence, but Ethan Harris with Bank of America Merrill Lynch says that won't be easy.
Is this consumers or
yes.
economy?
Consumers.
Clearly, we're in for a period of much weaker growth. And if you think about this from a historic perspective, normally coming out of a big recession, we should be growing 6-7% right now. This is an extremely disappointing recovery.
What did you say? We're in a W right now? Is that the thing where it like dips down and then it's up and then it's down again?
Yes. That's what I heard.
All right. This is, I was talking about on CNN where it was like they were talking about the whole Hindenburg effect thing. And I was mentioning that to Lara, who was in Vegas. And you know what? It really is bad because in Vegas, it's just, it was bad the last time I went to Vegas. And that was last year. And she said it's gotten even worse to where, things are just so empty and just so bereft of tourists and visitors and business in Vegas that it just staggers. And when Vegas suffers, like that is the sort of – that is the canary in the economic coal mine, because you figure that Americans always have money for gambling and booze and whores. And so if Vegas is doing poorly, then people have really finally sort of gotten slapped around enough to the point that they just don't have any money to spend.
Harris says it would take a major event to go into a slide similar to the 1930s.
In order to go back into recession right now, as opposed to just being in an anemic state, I think we need some new shock, a big policy mistake, a big external shock. That's really what got Japan into their second recession when they were in serious trouble in the 1990s.
Here's what I don't like. I don't like it in a soundbite when a guy says, what we would really need now, I mean, it's probably not going to happen. It would almost certainly require some huge administrative mistake. Because then in my head, it does like a jump cut to Obama saying, well, sure. So no, sign it. I mean, what's the worst that can go? No, pass the law today. What could happen? You know, and then you immediately cut to me on the corner wearing a barrel with suspenders. All right. There's your job watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
Good one.
Oh, that's terrific.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll do the top five here in just a few and so forth. All right. I feel like I – yes? You're
nothing. I'm just –
You just did this thing.
I thought I knew what was going on, and then we started talking while the music was playing about, you know, which spots we'd done and which we hadn't, and now I'm starting to feel like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know.
You just did that thing, though, where you looked at me, and I apologize. There's no other way to put it. But you did that, like, RCA dog thing where you were, like, tilting your head and looking at me sort of blankly. And I was just, right. Well, in any event, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, and you are better for it. I wonder if I should play this piece of audio. I wonder if I should tell you who this is and then play it, or if I should play it and see if you can guess who it is. You may or may not know. That's the thing. If I play it, you may know it for some reason. This is the thing that I was going to play. I guess I was going to play this maybe yesterday or the day before. It was going to be I was going to do it as sort of a quasi greatest songs ever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Remember me hinting at that sort of a bit? And I wonder if I should play this and then just see if you can sort of suss out who it is.
We could do that. We do we do need to get to the top five, and we do have to be out of here by 3 because we do have Sarah and Greg coming in.
Do we need to be out of here by
us.
Exactly 3?
Was
that made clear at some point? I'm just wondering if we have any wiggle room there.
We probably do. I mean, right. they don't get angry and start pounding on the doors.
Well, let
anything.
Me do this. I'll play this song for you. Then we'll do. I'll play the song. We'll do, which is pretty short. And we won't go in. We'll just stick around. We'll just play the song. We'll do the penis watch, and then the top five, and then we'll put a fork in it, as they say. You know what? I'll just play it for you, and I will ask everybody not to give away the answer here, not to reveal to Don Taylor, who may or may not know the artist behind the song, not to reveal who this is. And we'll see if you can guess. And then I'll tell you the fascinating story behind it. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you this. You will know the song, of course. Thank you.
I've heard this before, and I'm trying to remember who this is. Drawing a blank.
If your heart is in your dreams, nothing else is too extreme. When you wish upon a star as dreamers do.
You drawing a blank on this?
Yeah, I don't know why.
All right,
I don't
I'm gonna. So here's the thing. We'll come back to this. What I'll do is I'm gonna ask everybody to not, if you do know, not to give it away, just because I like to have a little bit of a reveal when possible. So I'll tell you what, we will go to the penis watch here. We'll do the top five, and then we will end the show with this, and I will reveal the artist behind that recording at the end of today's program. So we'll do this penis watch. We'll do the top five. We'll play that. Then we will make way for Fun Employment Radio, and you can hear those guys at funemploymentradio.com. And I never heard the resolution of whatever was up with Greg's dripping ankle. So, you know, just, I guess, be listening for that. Here is Don Taylor.
With your penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Here's Don Taylor with your penis watch for Friday.
An Australian man who sent an indecent picture of himself to a 12-year-old girl said he thought he was sending the picture to an adult. Andrew Bloomfield had sent the picture of his erect penis by mobile phone to a number randomly selected from his ex-girlfriend's phone. Bloomfield, 30, this week pleaded guilty in Geelong Magistrates Court to transmitting objectionable material under the Victorian Classifications Act. Police prosecutor Senior Constable Scott Bell said the victim, a 12-year-old girl on holiday with her family, checked her phone on February 26th and found a message sent 3 days earlier. The victim opened the message and immediately showed her mother, who phoned the number where the message originated, Constable Bell said. He said that when interviewed, Bloomfield admitted sending the picture and told police he was, quote, probably drunk at the time.
Yes.
Dominic Kerr for Bloomfield told the court his client was remorseful for his behavior and that it was an isolated incident. When he realized he had sent the message to a child, he immediately sent another text apologizing for his behavior, Mr. Kerr said. Magistrate Ian von Einem convicted Bloomfield and placed him on a six-month community-based order with 60 hours of unpaid community work.
You know, this is like one of those things. It's like if you read George Orwell's Animal Farm, where there's that moment toward the end, and I forget, I think it's maybe it's like Napoleon the Pig or whatever, who looks in the window and he sees Snowball sitting at the table wearing a suit, and like using a knife and fork and having food served to him by a butler. And he has this whole thing where he realizes that, that Snowball has evolved to the point where he has forgotten that he is an animal. This is really one of those stories that really reminds you that our place at the sort of top of the evolution chain is tenuous at best, because that's really just one step above. That is one step above, like some creature crushing berries and rubbing the juice on its face to look more appealing to prospective mates, or just sit there and just like warbling away some song while sitting on a branch, and like ruffling your feathers or, sending a picture of your erect penis to somebody at random out of a phone book. It just, where it's like you're not even really sure who's going to get it. It's just, somebody you'll send that message out into the world, like some sort of a penile message in a phallic bottle, and that somebody will go, my God, I have to meet that person right now and bear their children. Did you see that there's a follow-up, there's sort of an offshoot of that chat roulette thing that is just, where it will send a text message to a random cell phone number somewhere in the world?
No.
Yeah. Because I was reading the whole thing about chat roulette last night, which is actually offline. It's been offline for like a week now. After they tried that horrible experiment of localizing it, where you could just do chat roulette with people like in your own zip code. So that's offline. And the article was talking about other sort of similar services that have sprung up. And one of them is this like random text thing where you type in a text message in the box and then the online application just sends it to some cell phone number like somewhere on the planet, which just seems so like such a colossally bad idea. That could go wrong in so many thousands of ways.
Yeah, it's like, just even on a really fundamental level, that's like just saying, well, I don't have anything to spend money on anymore that I actually need or want. So I'm just going to spend, you know, 20 cents or whatever just for no reason.
Yes, yes, yes it is. And this is all true. All right, there you go. There's your penis watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Look at my enormous penis.
I'm huge.
And my troubles start melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Don't forget, once this program draws to a conclusion, we'll have a brief musical interlude, followed by an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this program. And those will kind of loop throughout the day. And then this weekend, we will fold in some material from the archives. Somebody asked about my interview with Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue. So we're going to put that up on the stream this weekend. And I believe that is already in the online archives. If not, I'll make sure that that is added. And the Don Rickles interview, I believe, we just added a couple days back. So there you go. All right. This is your top five for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Soft selling me.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Here is your top five. This is Don Taylor. Don Taylor, these are your top five songs from a musical, are they not?
Yes, they are.
All right.
We'll start with the honorable mention, which would be What Would Brian Boitano Do from South Park? Bigger, longer, and up.
What would Brian Boitano do if he was here right now? He'd make a plan and he'd follow through. That's what Brian Boitano do.
Brian Boitano was in the Olympics skating for the gold. He did two South Cows and a triple.
Was it tempting just to make the entire top five nothing but South Park songs?
It's hard because I thought about doing something from Cannibal, and I just love this song so much that I had to just, this had to be it.
It really is. Well, you know, it was, Stephen Sondheim called this the best musical he'd seen in 20 years.
It is a brilliant musical.
For Wendy, I'll be an activist too, because that's what Brian Boitano do. Brian Boitano do, he call the kids in town and tell them to unite for truth. That's what Brian Boitano do.
Is this the Brian Dennehy?
No.
I'm Brian Dennehy.
No, unfortunately, right. No. This is the different
Boitano
version.
Brian Boitano traveled through time to the year 3010. He fought the evil robot king to save the human race again. And when Brian Boitano built the pyramids, he beat up Kublai Khan. Because Brian Boitano doesn't take shit from him.
That's,
I fail.
I failed. There was a word. Sorry.
You brought shame on your entire family. These are Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical. You know, in my soul, I knew you hadn't bleeped it, too.
Yeah.
I went to pot it down and I didn't.
I knew I had one somewhere that I might have missed, but I failed this.
Right. I should start finding you. I'm going to put a swear jar on the table.
Okay, let's a swear jar.
Here's Don Taylor, her top five. Number five.
Number five is Rest in Peace. From the Buffy episode, Once More with Feeling.
And this is Spike's song?
Yes. You can make me feel James Marsters.
Like it isn't so. Why you come to be with me? I think I finally know. You're scared, ashamed of what you feel. You can't tell the ones you love. You know they couldn't deal. Whisper in the dead man's ear. It doesn't make it real.
Here's the thing about this song. This is like... as much as I love Buffy the Musical, it's just sort of a double-edged sword because, like, this song in particular is a great song from a great episode and a song entirely about a story arc which is, like... which I associate with the just implosion and decline of a great television show.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... that was a direction that character probably really shouldn't have gone. It was kind of adorable when Spike became sort of obsessed and stalkerish about Buffy.
Yeah.
But then when she started sleeping with him,
yeah,
it was like, no.
No, it's like... No, it just became, I mean...
Plus, then there was the whole thing, he fell in love with her, and then that sort of made you wonder... There was this whole thing in the last few years where they just ignored all of the rules they had created for their own universe.
Right.
You know, like Buffy was the Slayer because she was the Slayer. She was a person who could kill vampires. By the end of the episode, Xander was killing vampires with a pencil.
Right.
And it was the same thing that, you know, Angel was the soul, the vampire with a soul. Well, Spike shouldn't have been able to fall in love with anybody.
Is this two songs in a row featuring characters with chips in their heads, by the way?
I think so.
Because Spike has a chip in his head. By the way, let's not also overlook this fact about the Buffy Once More With Feeling episode. Here's something else that has always bugged me about that in a low-level way, and I know that it's a made-up show and vampires don't really exist. I'm just saying within the universe of the show, within the show's own internal logic, everybody sort of overlooks the fact that Xander is responsible for getting, like, 50 people killed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nobody ever says, like, bad. Nobody even ever says to him, like, you shouldn't have done that. Like, at no point does anybody ever hold Xander accountable for, really, depending on how you look at it, killing more people than anyone else on the show. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just, because he's the one who unleashed the whole musical demon.
Do you know what Spike's given name is?
You mean his human name?
Yes.
William.
William what?
It was like William. It wasn't a nickname. It was like William the Blood or something.
But he had an actual surname.
Give me credit for remembering that it was William, damn woman. No, I do not.
It was William Pratt.
I would never.
Which
remember
may have actually been an homage to Boris Karloff, whose actual given name was William Pratt.
I did not. All I remember was William. All right, these are Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical.
Number four, Triplets from the MGM musical The Bandwagon.
I'm trying to find it right here. 1, 2, 3. Okay, now, it doesn't appear that I, let me look here, because I've got,
Do you not have Triplets?
Oh, here we go. It was labeled Fred Astaire.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So that's why I couldn't quite figure it out. Okay. All right, I'm sorry. Yes.
This is from a section that is actually ostensibly from a musical on stage on Broadway, a review, and this is Fred Astaire, Nanette Fabre, and Jack Buchanan on their knees in little outfits dressed as babies doing this song.
Little unexpected children, simultaneously the doctor brought us, and you can see that we'll be three forever and you wouldn't know how agonizing being triple can be. Each one is individually the victim of a clinical day. Every summer we go away to Baden, Baden, Baden. Every winter we come back home to Walla, Walla, Walla.
That's fantastic.
We do everything alike.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
We dress alike, we walk alike, we talk alike, and what is more, we hate each other very much. We hate our folks. We're sick of jokes on what an art it is to tell us apart.
If one of us gets the measles,
another one gets the measles, then all of us gets the measles, and mumps, and croup. How I wish I had a gun, a widow gun. It would be fun to shoot the other two and be only one.
This took a dark turn.
It did. Anyway, yeah, The Bandwagon is a terrific musical, and it's one of my favorite MGM musicals, and just the song, I just find adorable.
I almost want to ask Ryan White if he's got top five, musical songs that he prefers. I think I might do that for Monday. These are Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical.
Number three. Zydrate Anatomy from Repo, the genetic opera.
This is that thing that sounds like they're coming to take me away, haha. A
little bit.
Yeah.
Repo is one of those movies that people either love it or they adore it. And I happen to love it.
Sometimes I wonder why. This is the thing that has Paris Hilton in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she doesn't suck, strangely enough.
Sometimes I wonder why they need me at all.
Zydrate comes in a little glass vial.
A little glass vial?
And the little glass vial goes into the gun like a battery. And the Zydrate gun goes somewhere against your anatomy. And when the gun goes off, it sparks and you're ready for surgery. Surgery.
Grave robber. And that's
Paris. Wow. I feel like I missed something by never seeing this in the theater. Because there was the whole thing, but they were showing it to Clinton Street all the time. Awesome. These are Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical.
Number two, The Lady's a Tramp from Pal Joey. And this is Rita Hayworth coming into the bar where she's slumming.
I believe you have a singer.
Yeah, Joey. Joey, sing a song for the lady.
What would the lady like to hear me sing?
Tell him to surprise me.
Joey, Surprise the lady.
I'll surprise the lady.
She gets too hungry for dinner at 8.
This is one of Frank Sinatra's best roles. Movie based on a musical that was in turn based on a John O'Hara novel. Songs by Rodgers and Hart and everything arranged by Nelson Riddle. And just beautiful songs.
That's why the lady is a tramp. Doesn't like crap games with barons and earls. Won't go to Harlem in ermine and pearls.
It's one of those songs where not only Sinatra could do this, but where Sinatra did it really well.
With the rest of the girls.
It didn't matter whether what he was singing was complimentary or insulting. It all just came out sort of graceful and, you know, and fantastic.
Well, and that's why I left that little bit of dialogue at the beginning, too, because the context that most people aren't aware of, if you just heard the song and you don't know where it fits in the movie, he's this bar singer, and Rita Hayworth is this millionaireess widow, who is slumming with her rich buddies one night, comes into this bar, hears him sing, comes back by herself after closing, and then just is like I said, only speaking to the owner, I hear you have a singer.
Right.
Tell him to surprise me. And this is how he responds.
Fantastic.
Sing a song for the lady. And he sings, "The Lady is a Tramp."
She'd never bother with people she'd hate. That is why the lady is a tramp.
These are Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical.
Number one is Schadenfreude from Avenue Q.
How did I know? Well, I knew this would be on the list.
Right now you are down and out and feeling really crappy.
I'll see.
And when I see how sad you are, it sort of makes me happy.
Happy.
Sorry, Nikki, human nature, nothing I can do. It's Schadenfreude making me feel glad that I'm not you.
Well, that's not very nice, Gary.
By the way, this is a woman playing Gary Coleman, singing with a puppet.
And drops a tray of glasses.
Yeah.
And ain't it fun to watch figure skaters falling on their asses?
Sure.
Don't you feel all warm and cozy watching people out in the rain?
You bet.
That's Schadenfreude. People taking pleasure in your pain.
Awesome.
Schadenfreude, huh? What's that, some kind of Nazi word?
Yup, it's German for happiness at the misfortune of others.
Happiness at the misfortune of others. That is German. Watching a vegetarian.
Well done. Good list,
Dawn.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Did they modify this at all when Gary Coleman died? I heard or I read a story somewhere that they did sort of an ad hoc song that was sort of put together that was
I don't know.
Ongoing thing or a one-time thing that was sort of a Gary Coleman tribute. Fantastic. Well done. There you go. That's one of those top fives that we made everybody in the building do it when we came up with it a couple years ago, just because you discovered that every single person had five songs from a musical of which they were a big fan. Hey, here's the thing I can't remember. What is the name of this comes from like almost. Do I dare answer this? We're heading toward the close of the program. Don, what say you?
Yeah,
all
why
right,
not?
Well, that's fine. All right, let me make sure that I've actually got the. I had reached for the phone to actually start muting it. And all right, hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Hi, Rick and Don.
Hello, hi.
Hi, I just have a quick question. I'm sorry, Don was talking about the Buffy song.
Yes, to whom are we speaking?
Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. How can we help you?
Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I want to know when they said Pratt was his last name, because I completely missed that, and it's like my favorite TV show.
Somebody's calling out somebody's Buffy knowledge. Da-na-na-na-na-na.
Hold on, and I'll let you know.
All I remember is...
I know. I'm sorry.
Is this that... This isn't the thing where he got ambushed in an alley, because that's what happened. That's what happened to Angel, where what's her name, like Drusilla, you know, like had him in the cobblestone alley, where he said in his horrible, horrible accent, "My, but you're a pretty thing," and then she bites him or whatever.
May not be aware of it because apparently the name came out in the comic.
I was just going to say, please tell me this is some extended universe crap where it came from, like a novel. All right, so Rachel, your mom.
I didn't actually miss it.
Yeah, your memory is not defective. It's just that Don is a colossal nerd. So this came. Was this like one of the season 8 things?
Yes, I believe so. It was a non canon comic, as they say.
Well, is that not a canon? Is that not?
Think it's actually season 8. I don't know.
So this came from the Buffy comic book. So I would imagine that it is probably accepted as fact, but it is not something that was given on the television program. And by the way, I would like to commend you, and I mean this with no irony, I would like to commend you for catching the fact that Dawn, once again, just made something up.
I didn't make something up.
Well, you passed along a non-fact as a fact, or at least put it in, I think, a misleading context, that someone noticed it. So well done, Rachel. Rachel,
you just had me questioning myself and my own, you know, faithfulness here and not knowing that his last name was Pratt.
By God.
But if it is a comic thing, I have some of them on the way. I was went to Things From Another World website and ordered some Buffy comics online from their Nick and Dent pile after you guys were talking about them a couple days ago.
I've got some season 8 on the way.
Here's the thing
we're going to do, and I'm going to, I don't mean this in a creepy way, but I'm looking at the screen right now. I'm making a note of your number because I think what we're going to do, A, is we're going to give you something bright and shiny from the Rick Emerson pile of stuff over here, and we're going to award you a prize for catching Dawn passing along a falsehood as fact. And I think from now on, I may actually make that. That's going to be a prizable thing from now on. When someone catches Dawn spinning some sort of yarn behind the microphone and then just putting it forward as though it were an irrefutable fact. And if somebody is able to then point that out, we'll go ahead and just we'll award you some gee-gaw for that. So I've made a note, even remember, we'll get in touch at some point we'll find something from a pile of stuff. We have a fine collection of books to begin with. So we will we'll send something your way for doing that. So thank you very much, Rachel.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
All right, there you go. I've been wondering how to give stuff away, and now I know. Thank you, Don Taylor. You've shown me the road. All right. I wouldn't have known. But I guess that's what we found out, right?
I didn't actually make it up.
I just swallow things whole cloth. Well, no, but that's the thing. But I said, well, I don't remember saying it. And I believe it was put forward as though it were something said on the Buffy television program, which was not. That's all I'm saying. So that was Rachel. God bless you. And how great that, that really is... That really is one of those great things about this show that and about this audience, that like just the tiniest little bit of Buffy trivia, and immediately somebody not only heard it, knew the answer as distinct from what you believe the answer to be, and then actually took the time to call and correct us about it, which makes everything here sort of wonderful. All right, we have to get out of here because I promised I would do this and I got to do it today. So I'm going to play this little song and then we're going to wrap things up. So. We played a bit of When You Wish Upon a Star early, and I meant to do this earlier in the week as just sort of a way to wrap up. I think it was Wednesday's show where I was originally going to play this. But I'll go ahead and I'll do this now because I want you to hear it. I want you to hear it knowing the context of it, because I think that makes it even greater. Earlier this week, I believe it was either Tuesday or Wednesday, we were noting that it was a day of many celebrity birthdays, including Mr. Elvis Costello and including Mr. Gene Simmons. And Gene Simmons was born in Israel, of course, in 1949. He came to America, lived in Jackson Heights, Queens, in New York City. The age of 8, he moved here with his mother and uncle, who I believe were the only two members of his family to survive imprisonment during the Holocaust. He came here. He didn't, and it's no secret that inside he is just a colossal geek. He didn't speak the language. He had no friends. He was, by his own account, afraid of everything. So Gene Simmons kind of escaped into the world of sci-fi and comics and movies and television. And, you know, in the early 70s, he supported himself by going to the sort of nascent comic conventions of the time. And he would buy and sell comic books, which is how he supported himself during the early days of Kiss. When Paul was working at a deli and Ace is driving a cab and Gene is selling comic books. You know, a guy who would stay in hotels and still, to this day, stays in hotels under the name of Reginald Van Helsing, who, of course, is Dracula's arch nemesis. You know, and he really is, in many ways, the American success story kind of incarnate. And whatever one thinks of Gene Simmons personally, whatever one thinks about his behaviors or peccadillos, he is a guy who really created himself out of thin air and created himself out of American popular culture. And he's a man who, by his own admission, did not know how to speak English until he started watching television. And the very first thing he ever understood in English was the Walt Disney program, which aired on ABC starting in, I don't know, 1961, I think, is something like when that went on the air. And that was the first thing that he ever understood and was able to speak back to his mother, and were broadcast by Disney. And so in 1978, when all four members of Kiss put out solo albums at the same time, at which point they were already the biggest band in the world, everybody else put out exactly what you would expect them to put out. And Gene Simmons himself put out a solo album that had all of the usual staples of rock and, you know, the blood and fire and sex and more sex and, you know, debauchery. And the final track on Gene Simmons' solo album in 1978, at a time when parents believed him to be evil incarnate, when they believed Kiss to be knights in Satan's service who were going to drag your children to some sort of a fiery, demon-filled afterworld, Gene Simmons, with what he's said repeatedly since then, was absolutely no irony at all. He ended his album with something from the very first piece of English he was ever able to speak aloud to his mother, and something which, in ways that are almost innumerable, sums up how he must feel about his own life in a whole lot of ways. So in any event, so happy birthday, Gene Simmons, and everybody else this week. Without further ado, I give you Gene Simmons right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. So there you go. What better way to end the week? My name is Rick Emerson. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology manager provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Friday, August 27th, 2010. And that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.